Hey, so, hey, Eric, what are we going to talk about today?
So,
I had no idea on this one.
Okay, so I had some ideas. One is, I was thinking about Recess, and I was thinking that we could talk a little bit about school recess, because that's obviously a huge topic of conversation in our house.
Yeah, this will just lead into a large discussion about school lunch, right?
Yeah. And then I was hoping that I've really enjoyed talking about the 1971 baseball season, so I hope we could talk some more about that. But
I kind of want to know what's going on with that.
Yeah. Oh, so. Okay. Good. All right. Well, maybe we'll start out with that. So we'll start out with that, and then we'll see. So, and the other thing I thought about was that if you wanted to talk about what Clean the House music is.
Oh, sure. Yeah. There's been a lot lately. Yeah, and there's another one. The album that I'm going to review next is another. It's a perfect CTH.
Well, okay. So let's start with that. So, okay, I was thinking about this. I mean, I know that this is probably just for us, but nonetheless. So we have this blog called The Heath Post, and it's at heathpost.com. And Matthew does album reviews, and he's got a category of albums called Clean the House Music. And so – and they're under a label called CTH Music. And so he most recently posted one. Let's see, what was it? It was Season High by Little Dragon. And he counted that. And it actually got quite a good review. It was 3 out of 5 stars, which is pretty good. And Matthew's pretty tough on albums, and that was pretty good. That's a very strong review. So we'll probably hear from it again later in the year when he does his year-end wrap-up. But anyway, so what's the deal? What's the deal with Clean the House music?
This all dates back to 1988, maybe? Mm-hmm. 87, 88,
yeah.
I guess that year. In college, it was my first year to have an apartment.
Kirk Lovington Drive,
yeah, is what it's called. Yeah, a friend and I got an apartment off campus.
That's Kentucky, yeah.
And every Saturday, we would try to clean the apartment really good.
Yeah.
And so we got in this habit of picking music to throw on. And certain albums became real standards, like China Crisis. I forget the name of their album. But one of the China Crisis albums, Style Council, was a big one for cleaning the house. And they tended to be things that were kind of a little upbeat. They had a good feel to them, like you could sing along with them. They nothing too thoughtful, nothing too dark, nothing so over the top, that kind of stuff. So that's kind of where the idea goes back to.
Yeah,
it's the kind of albums we used to throw on for that. And so that's kind of where it goes to. So for me, it's that's sort of the descriptor, right? I want it to be a little upbeat.
Yeah.
I want it to be kind of atmospheric and sound a little bit to some degree, because it fits, especially if you open the windows up in the spring.
Right.
Yeah, you got the air coming in.
Sure.
And you want something with a beat, so it'll keep you going while you're cleaning. And it's great if it's an album you know, because then you can kind of sing along with it. And now that I've got kids, I like something that they'll get into, like the sound. Right. They like the beat of it and the sound. So again,
but it can be objectionable.
Right. You don't. I don't want something objectionable. Not something with a lot of language there where it's going to lead to questions about what are they talking about in the song. So
exactly. Yeah.
So even like Little Dragon, Season High. To be honest with you, I didn't listen to the lyrics close enough to know if it's questionable or not. But
I'm sure it is.
Yeah, probably. So it's probably one of those things. Sometimes you'll throw an album on, you'll be like, or you might know a song or two that you want to skip. Like that Kevin Ross album, which I also labeled that way. There's a few songs in that album I'd probably skip. But for the most part, I really like the feel and the sound of that album. Like, it just has a nice, upbeat, positive sort of vibe to it.
Yeah.
So that's the basic idea.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. And it would seem like you would want – I was thinking about this, and it would seem like you would definitely want something that has no stopper songs, like a song that's just like, so for whatever reason,
right,
whether the lyrics are objectionable, but just like you dislike it so much.
Because you want to be able to throw it on and forget about it.
And right, leave it. Yeah. You don't want to have to be going back to the record player or whatever you're playing it on.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So I could see that. That actually, for me, that's a big thing for, there's certain music that I, for my job that I write to, and that's a big thing, is I don't want it to ever have even one song that I dislike. It doesn't even have to necessarily have songs that I love. But the key thing is it doesn't have one song that's a stopper. And
those are hard to come by.
They are very
hard to come by. Honestly, yeah.
They are very hard to come by. And they tend not to be, you know, what I would necessarily say are my favorite would be my favorite albums, you know, because – There are albums, and I should have thought about this enough to come up with an example, but there are albums that I think are fantastic, but they have one song that I just can't stand so much that I would, you know, skip sure past.
But, well, and some albums are too good, you know, like
yeah, they hold your attention.
Yeah, like I'm not gonna throw on, you know, like Born to Run.
Right.
Because I won't clean the house. I'll just start listening to Born to Run. But,
right.
Or Quadrophenia, because I'll lay down and take a nap. But, you know, it's like, no, I mean, you know, there's some albums where it's just, it doesn't fit. Jazz is usually pretty good.
Usually pretty good.
Dave Brubeck type jazz.
Yeah.
I really like any instrumental music.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, you like the smooth jazz, right?
I do like smooth jazz.
So actually, do you ever, you guys never really went to Nashville a lot, did you, when you were a kid? Did you guys go down? So I don't know the time frame that well, but there was a time in Nashville where there was a radio station called WZEZ.
Right. Your dad loved that station.
Right. Easy Listening. Yeah, that was the,
sure.
He loved that station, and mm-hmm, it was like elevator music. I mean, I don't know how else to describe it. You know, it was like pop tunes that were put to like a really quiet, laid back sort of sound. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like Percy Faith is like the pinnacle of that stuff.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. 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 No.
Yeah. I was listening to some Percy Faith just this morning.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I totally get it. And in fact, what there are in this like 1971 project of me is of mine, there are you can get whole, like, how did people maintain this stuff, but anyway, where like people have huge cuts of like 2 hours of Easy Listening radio from 1971.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's very cool. And so I listen to those kinds of things quite a bit. Did you happen to see, China Crisis, by the way, that album, I was just looking them up. It was probably either What Price Paradise or Diary of a Hollow Horse.
It's What Price Paradise.
There you go. That came out in 1986.
Diary of a Hollow Horse is good, but it's a little more experimental.
Yeah.
So not quite the same. Not as poppy.
Oh, Walter Becker. Oh, you know, the China Crisis, they were one of the two Steely Dan guys did that.
No, I didn't know that. No,
yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. You know, it's funny. They're one of those groups I listened to a lot in college, and I still throw on that album to clean the house to occasionally, but I never have read about them. I don't know much about them.
Well, somehow, well, maybe I'll. Yeah, I'm just reading their Wikipedia page, of course. But Walter Becker was a member. Oh, he.
I got a call. I got to see. Someone keeps calling me, so hold on. All right. Sorry about
that. So I did some more reading on China Crisis.
Yeah.
And the deal is that Walter Becker, he had a pretty limited relationship with them. He produced an album, and he actually did play some synthesizer, but he never appeared with them or anything.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So anyway.
I actually saw Steely Dan in concert one time.
Really?
Yeah. You know what's sad is that I lived in Philadelphia, and I had so many opportunities to see people like Kelly Willis, who played there on a regular basis.
Yeah.
I think Everything But the Girl played in Philadelphia when I was living there. I never saw any of them. I'm such an idiot. But I saw Steely Dan, who I don't even...
Did you ever see Everything But the Girl?
No. No. Huh. Or Kelly Willis.
Yeah.
Such is life.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, depends on what's going on in your life at the time.
But I got to see Michael Stipe come up on stage with 10,000 Maniacs.
That's right. We did see that.
Like weeks maybe before they announced they were breaking up. I mean, it was very close.
Yeah. Yeah, it was really. It seemed like they were really taking off. Yeah.
Can you explain to me why 10,000 Maniacs is such a forgotten group? Are they? I mean, it feels like to me they're completely non-existent.
Well, I think largely because of that move, right? They were definitely ascending, you know?
I guess that's true.
You know who the 10,000 Maniacs is kind of like? 10,000 Maniacs is the Boston of 80s alternative music, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, in the same way that...
Oh, but Boston's still huge.
Well, but Boston had to come back, you know, and it was under a much shorter time frame. But, you know, Boston released those two albums, sure. And like everybody at like Heath, you know, everybody would talk about Boston as though, oh, nobody ever talks about, you know, nobody knows about this band, but that those first two albums were so good, and then they disappeared. And then when we were in college, they came back and came out with those giant albums. And, you know, whatever.
Probably when I don't know. I think of them that way because I always... Of course, maybe that's just me. I still think of their first album as being kind of their... Well, I guess you're talking about Third Stage. That's right. It's the name of the third album.
That's the one that came out in college,
yeah,
right? Wasn't there two that
I
came
never
out?
Listened to. Yeah, there was Boston in 1976 and then Don't Look Back in 78. I'm looking them up on AllMusic. And honestly, Boston, their first album, was kind of it. I mean, it's... You know, they never were able to get back to that level of success. We'll put it that way.
Can't believe how much this podcast is wrapped up with
Boston.
No.
You're right. One of your favorite bands.
Yeah, let's just quit talking about this all together. All right,
come on.
1971 baseball. All right, so we are about 30 games into the season now.
How good I'll get Baseball Reference back up.
Yeah. All right. So, you want to have a little quiz?
Sure. This will be impossible for me, but yeah.
Okay. So now this will like set your expectations. There have been each one. Now the baseball has aligned itself in the divisions that we know and love, right? Now we have the East and the West and the American League
right,
and the East
right, right.
National League. And it's the six teams, it's the six team structures. Okay. The six teams that you know to be in the American West are in the American West at this point.
Right.
And at this point, there have been two division pennants.
No, wait. I've got a question for you on that front. So Washington's going to move, right, and go to
Texas
after this season, right?
That's right. And then the Brewers are going to move over to
the Brewers
East.
Brewers are going to move to the East, right? Okay.
Yeah, right. So, yeah, I should clarify. No, you're exactly right. I didn't note that. Yeah, we've got the Brewers in the American West at this point, and they're the former Seattle Pilots, and we still have the Washington Senators in the East.
Okay. Yeah, I remember reading about the Senators moving last time we were talking about 71. So. Okay.
Right. Okay, so the first question is that there have been two American League West pennants in history, right? They've just been doing this. This is their third season of this alignment. So who do you think has won those first two American League West pennants? I know, it's tough.
West.
It won't surprise you when you hear, but yeah, it's tough off the top of your head. It's the Minnesota Twins.
I guess that would make sense because they're aging out at that point, right? They've got
So it's the Twins, And then the same team has won the two East American League Eastern Division.
Yeah, well, Baltimore was...
That's Baltimore.
Right,
that's,
they just dominated yeah. right there at the end of the...
Okay, the National League East, there have been...
let's talk for a second about those Twins teams. So, the Twins teams, who were the big guys on those Twin teams? That were so, Harmon Killebrew, he's aging yeah. out at that point.
Yeah.
But who else is on those teams? Those, he's the name that always pops off the top of my head.
Okay, well, the big... So Carew is on these teams, and he's very young.
I was going to say, he's a kid, right, at that point?
Yeah, he's starting second baseman, but he was hurt at the end of last season. But he's definitely a star. I mean, he's already a star. But, yeah, it's Killebrew. Their best hitter, though, I guess, I mean, I think that everybody would agree with this, but their key hitter, and actually he's in 1971, he's leading the American League, is Tony Oliva.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Now at this point, about 30. Well,
oh, and he's right at
games,
the peak of his. So in 71, he's career.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, he's an all-star, and he is leading. He's hitting .395 at this point in 1971, and he's also leading the American League in home runs.
What
nine.
Month are you in now?
We are. Well, we're the same dates. May 9th.
Oh, okay.
It's
you're
May 9th.
You're copying us. Okay.
Yeah. So anyway, so yeah, that's Minnesota, and. Oh, now I'm getting a call. Let me see who this is. I'm fine. Okay, I gotta let. If I apologize, it's gonna ring. Oh, maybe I can turn that off. Okay, so who? The National League East. Yeah, the National League East. There have been two winners. So far.
Well, 69 would have been the Mets, I assume.
The Mets, that's right. Right. And now, do you know who won last year? In 1970?
70. I'm trying to remember who played in the World Series. Who did the Orioles play in the World Series in 70?
The Pittsburgh Pirates.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, the National League West. This is awful, but I've actually got to double check this. I'll look up the 1969 statistics. Okay, do you know who won the National League West in 1970? Do you happen to know who the Pirates beat in the National League Championship
Series?
No
idea.
It was the Reds, and that was Sparky Anderson's first season.
I didn't realize I didn't realize that he made the playoffs so early.
Yeah. They were at that point, they had been kind of thought of as an underachieving team.
Well, I was going to say, because a lot of, like you had talked last time about the A's picking up all those guys
yeah.
in the draft. Well, similar dates, right, for some of
yeah.
these Cincinnati guys, if I'm thinking
yeah,
right.
Yeah, the Reds are a little bit ahead of the A's in their development. And, of course, they are actually going to be more built by trades, because what they're going to end up doing, they still don't have Joe Morgan and they still don't have George Foster. And who else don't they have? They've pretty much, they're set in their position players other than that. Oh, Cesar Geronimo isn't on the team yet. He's still with Houston. So they still got some really key position players to get in line before they get terrific. Their pitching staff was never just.
Right. No, their pitching staff was never their strong
yeah.
point.
So anyway, they won last year. Sparky Anderson won in his first season. They had been previously managed by a guy named Dave Bristol. And the thing is like all the like Bench and Rose and all those guys, that was like apparently a real unpopular move to get Bristol out. But then they, of course, caught into Sparky Anderson. And anyway, the previous year, the first year of the National League West had been won by the Atlanta Braves. So, okay, so now we're in the 1971, and our divisions are, our division leaders are Oakland. They're up by three games in the West. They're 19-11. The best team in the American League now is Boston. Boston has, they've won four in a row, and they're 1.5 up on Baltimore, the defending champs. Boston's big offseason pickup was they got Luis Aparicio from the White Sox to play shortstop. And that's a big deal because Boston's their up the middle defense was thought to be their weakness the last couple seasons. And so they kind of like re-engineered the defense. In the National League East, now we've got the Mets are bouncing back, and now they're ahead in the National League East by a half game on Pittsburgh. And the interesting thing about the Mets that's coming out right now is that they're starting to be – so, like, the Mets were the Cinderella story of 69, of course. And but now there's, like, all these fissures that are showing themselves that, like, it turned out that, like, Ron Swoboda, he had a big feud with Tom Seaver. And he was traded then to Montreal. Now he's the Expos. But and it all has to do, according to Sporting News, it all has to do with this deal where, like, they're all the Mets one time are contributing to a gift for, like, a clubhouse worker. And Seaver got into Ron Swoboda's jeans pockets, like, in the locker room, and got his $25 contribution to the gift and got him out of the jean pockets. And that, like, really made Swoboda furious. Like, apparently Swoboda was going to contribute, and Ed Cranepool had said it was okay for Seaver to get the money out of Swoboda's pocket. But then Swoboda didn't like it, but Seaver did. And it sounds like Swoboda didn't really like Seaver either anyway.
Right.
But anyway, so we got this great, which I can totally relate to. You know, that's like something you can imagine. Like,
it's such a weird workplace issue. Yeah. Yeah.
It is a huge workplace issue, though, right?
Yeah. That's funny, though.
Like, the contributions to gifts. I hate that whole.
Oh, yeah.
It's awful.
Yeah. That's why it's better when it's, they send around the thing and you do it independently. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, my thing is that, yeah, I hate the whole, like, let's each give X amount, because, you know, people make different amounts. And,
right.
You know, that whole thing. Yeah. That's a big, I'm a big stickler about that.
Oh, actually. Maybe you just don't like the person. You really don't want to contribute, you know?
Exactly.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah, of course. And you shouldn't have to reveal that. You know?
Right.
And in fact, you don't want it revealed.
Or you literally never worked with the person. There's a million reasons why. I'm with you.
Right, there. Exactly. Yeah, that's always the worst. Like, when there's the new person in the job, and then, like, in the next week, you're going to get together this gift, and you're like, right. I know this guy, but we're each pitching in $20 to do this.
Right. It's
like, yeah. Okay, and so then in the National League West, it's the Giants. And the Giants have the best record in baseball. With a winning percentage of 724, they're 21-8, and they are already 7 games ahead of the Dodgers in the National League West in May. That's a big lead for May.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. So that's what I wanted to talk about a little bit with the Giants. So I don't know about you, but you see, I always had a sense that, like, Willie Mays was done, was basically, like, done and hanging on after, like, 1965 or so.
Yeah, it's hard for me to understand Mays and his whole oeuvre. I mean, you hear people, I guess I've listened to Kornheiser enough, that always referred to him flailing around in the outfield.
Yes.
Well, and McCovey, too. You know, I think of
yeah.
And you think of McCovey as kind of being no longer descending, we'll put it that way.
Yeah.
Like, he's past his prime at this point, too. Yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of with you. I didn't realize that Mays, when we were looking at this last time, I was surprised to see that Mays was still starting, like, playing that much.
Yeah.
To be honest with you.
Yeah. Well, and that's just it. He's still, like, he's the second best hitter in the National League at this point in the season. He's hitting .388.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. And he's, like, one of the top RBI guys in the league. And, I mean, it wasn't so let's see. So back in the Sports Illustrated preview of that season, William Leggett, you know, he says in this preview, he says, again, the Giants will have Willie Mays, who at almost 40 is still more May than September, Bobby Bonds. Anyway, so he goes into some other stuff. So in any event, at the moment, at that time, it wasn't like, you know, Willie Mays is really, you know, his career's over and he's having this, like, last
right.
little surge. No, he's still thought of as, like, a top outfielder.
Well, and I guess, you know, you think about it, people always refer to the point where he got traded over to the Mets, right? Yeah. It's kind of being like, why did he do that?
Yeah.
You know, like, why didn't he just stay with the team he had been with?
Right. Well, and even then, you know, the interesting thing about that is that for better or for worse, yeah, he does get traded to, or he goes to New York. I don't know if he was traded or if it was just some other way, but.
Well, it happened during the season, so I'm assuming he was traded.
He had to be traded. And they end up going to the, I mean, he plays in the World Series with the Mets. So he plays for a, you know.
72.
Yeah, but I think that there's like some kind of embarrassing error in that World Series. And then that's how that all takes off, he was hanging on. But yeah, because of that, like my impression was, is that was like the last 10 years of his career. And that's certainly.
No, I agree with you. No, I'm with you there. I know exactly what you mean. Now, I will say, if you look at his numbers, the last time he batted for the season over 300 was 1965.
Yeah, so.
So he's certainly no longer. But in 1970, he hit 28 home runs.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not like an 83 RBI. So, and he batted 291 in 1970. So for a guy at 39... like, that's pretty incredible.
Yeah, those are great numbers.
Yeah, those are pretty incredible numbers.
And
so.
I don't think, at least, you know, when Yastrzemski won his batting title, he won it at, like, 301 or 299, one or the other.
Yeah,
of course,
yeah.
That's in the American League.
Well,
so,
at that point, well, in the 60s, yeah, in the 60s, all your batting averages were way down.
Yeah, so 290, yeah. You know, that would probably be.
That's a very good point.
Yeah. The other thing about this that kind of surprised me, is that in this same Sports Illustrated season preview, is it just kind of out of hand, William Leggett identifies Willie McCovey as, he calls him baseball's premier slugger. And that, you know, that's interesting to think about too, that like in a mainstream publication, without like making a case for it, you would just call Willie McCovey, you know, you think about all the guys that are in the league at that point. And
right.
And that Willie McCovey, at the moment, in a mainstream publication, he would be declared baseball's premier slugger. I never had that sense of Willie McCovey, you know.
Same here.
To me, he's the most famous thing about Willie McCovey are all those peanut strips, you know, of him not getting the ball. I don't even know what happened that led to those peanuts. But, you know, he's
– Right. They're always – No, I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
So that's your baseball 1971 update.
That's pretty cool. I'm glad to know we're cruising along.
Yeah. Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see how the season plays out. I'm intrigued by it's weird to think, you know, I always forget that the Reds played in the 72 series for some reason.
Yeah, that's
and,
right.
I should have thought about them being that good. But I've always wondered about the timing, and I guess I'd never made the connection about them making so many trades to bring in those guys. But,
yeah. And Morgan, I mean, golly.
Yeah.
That was a huge trade. My gosh, Foster hit 50 home runs that one year, 52 home runs or whatever.
Yeah, Foster was, he was really good.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we talked about this the other day. I mean, it's odd how those teams have kind of been. And maybe that's right. Maybe it's just Pete Rose. You know, we don't think of those teams the way we once did.
Right.
If you think about the way that team was thought of in 1975.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, the Big Red Machine and, you know, and them crushing, you know, like the way they beat Boston and all that stuff. It's, yeah. I mean, they won 108 games in 75.
Yeah, that was a great team. That
it's crazy. Crazy to think about.
All right.
We never got around to recess.
Yeah. Well, maybe we'll talk about that someday soon.
I was just hoping we could get around to school lunches, but, you know.
It's... Well, that's fine. We can talk about all that sometime. That's the conversation I have with the – I always talk to my daughter every day about her – when she – what did she talk about at lunch? Who she sat with? And then what did you do at recess? You know, all that kind of stuff. It's intentional. She's such a conscientious student, and she's always worried about that. So I feel like that I should not ask her about that stuff. You know, she gets that enough, but she puts so much pressure on herself. So I try to talk to her about the other stuff. And,
sure. I know what you mean.
Yeah. So that's always fun. It's interesting to hear about the, you know, the games that are being played and stuff. So, yeah. So we'll talk about that sometime soon. I got to get back to
work. Yeah, that sounds cool. Yeah, yeah. No, it's getting late. All right. Okay. Well, I'll have to splice this one together.
All right.
Well, any thoughts on...
If you can find China Crisis, then I think you should do that.
Yeah, good luck. Yeah, exactly. I've gotten lazy anymore. I just looked at that one site because it's a very nice website.
So what's the deal with Minis? Are they just... Is it free and...
I don't know.
Oh.
They'll probably get sued at some point. No, the website I go to, it's freemini.org. It's, you know, people record MIDI versions of songs
and post them
up there. I think how we're using them is fine because we're only using a few seconds. But,
right.
And, you know, it's not like we're commercializing what we're doing.
Yeah.
So, but... Yeah, so it's fun just to see what people have recorded and how they... Sometimes you'll see multiple versions of the same song, you know, where people are trying to do different... Yeah, somebody's just on the piano line or something like that. So. All right, well, I'll talk to you later.
Okay, talk to you later.
Okay, bye.